The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 5 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 17th of June, 2026. How are you keeping? I hope you're well. We're in good form here around the offices of Highland Radio. I think it might be the mild, dry weather. I don't know. Maybe it's because we're halfway through the working week. Who's to say? But we're here nonetheless. So we've got a busy show, lots to discuss. We're going to be digging behind the headlines on some of the big stories, making those headlines today and making our own headlines into the future. We've pulled forward the release of this week's podcast with Gary Jennings. There's been an absolute huge interest in it, and the rally kicks off in earnest tomorrow night. So we're going to release that at 11 o'clock today. So we'll preview that a little later on. That and so much more besides. 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 60 25,000. If you want to give us a call, feel free to do so too. 074 91 25,000 91 25,000, or via email comments@highlandradio.com. It's not in the papers today, but there was some really potentially good news yesterday. You might remember that there was a bit of a stagnation in relation to the provision of is it Givinostat? It's the drug that can be given to certain children. There's three Donegal families, of course. We spoke to the family of young Aaron from Lahey. It's a drug that can help with a particular condition whereby, you know, the muscle mass and what have you can deteriorate. And Aaron and his family were up in the Dáil last year, and he was on his feet at that stage. And unfortunately, his condition progressed. And he had found himself in a wheelchair, and we spoke to the school, we spoke to the parents and what have you. And with a little bit of a push, there was a big political push on it. Because, as I say, this had been sitting dormant for a number of months. Now, the families had been working hard behind the scenes, don't get me wrong, but it had been sitting dormant for a couple of months, and a head of steam was gotten up. And it was brought up in the Shannon, it was brought up in the Dáil. You remember that week where we were really pushing for this type of representation, and it came, and it seems to be good news. There's a big step in the right direction in relation to all of this. For the first, for at least three Donegal families that we know of, this drug, Givinostat, has been approved by the HSC senior leadership team. So the application has now moved to the managed access protocol stage, which is one of those final stages before access can be made available. So again, from us here, credit to the families of these young lads who, through the most difficult times, become the best advocates that they could be, keeping that fight going. And also, it was very pleasing to see a united political front. We had Manus Boyle, Pat the Cope Gallagher, Piers Doherty, Padraig McLaughlin, I know, made representations in relation to this as well. Put the pressure on the government, put the pressure on the minister, and things seem to have progressed a little bit. And because this is so time sensitive, we just really hope for the three families and maybe more in Donegal that it's not too little too late, that this is in time to maximise the to maximise the quality of life for the families affected. We heard from one family, or about one family, who they've got two boys affected by this condition. One, I believe, was on a trial in Northern Ireland and had access to this drug. The brother was awaiting for HSC approval. So two in the house. It affects mostly young lads. Two in the house. One has access to the drug, the other doesn't. That made no sense. So hopefully now common sense has prevailed. We're all going to keep the pressure on, of course, to make sure that these final hurdles are cleared really, really quickly. But hopefully those families are waking up this morning with a little bit more hope than they may have went to bed with the night before last. If you have anything to say in relation to that, I gave you the numbers out a little earlier on. The Finn Valley Voice is released today. They cover a massive Garda campaign. This led to Castlefin cocaine charges. A massive Garda operation involving over 100 members of the force led to a Castlefin man appearing in court last week on cocaine charges. The accused solicitor, Mr. Kieran Shields, says that this is a complex matter and added that it was connected to other matters. More detailed reporting in that paper today. We're going to be discussing a vote in the Dáil tonight, which looks set to pave the way for the ending of the three-day wait in abortion referrals, because the Coalition has bagged it and it is a Sinn Féin motion. The Taoiseach and well, now I must say, I've never received one text or call to this radio show by any group or organisation seeking to have this three-day period gotten rid of, but that doesn't mean that there's not a massive public appetite for that. I'm just saying that's just the way it is. So it's a Sinn Féin proposal to remove the mandatory three-day wait period for abortions. The motion is set to come before the Dáil today and will remove the requirement for a woman seeking an abortion to have two consultations with a three-day wait in between. In the Dáil yesterday, Mr. Martin said he was aware of the arguments for and against the change and called for a respectful Dáil debate on the matter. The HSE has done its own studies in relation to this, and I present these figures to you, and you might say, well, this proves that it should be retained, or you might say this proves that it should be gotten away with. But the HSE study found that between 2019 and 2024, and I'll delay and give you the answer just to give you an opportunity to determine what you believe the number would be. Between 2019 and 2024, how many women would you say turned up for the first consultation? And then we're told, obviously, now we have a cooling off period or whatever you might describe it, a period for reflection. And then you come back for the second meeting. How many women between 2019 and 2024 do you believe went for the first consultation but never returned? Now, there's a number of reasons why that might happen, but I think we could probably accept the majority is that they perhaps chose not to go ahead with the abortion. So how many would you say? Would you say it's 300, 500, 20,000, 40,000? I don't know. What do you think? I do know. I'm going to tell you now. So between 2019 and 2024, almost 11,000 women went for the first consultation but didn't return for the second consultation or didn't come back after the 3 days at all. So that's probably a little over 2,000 a year. Now, as I say, you might say that that's proves there's no need for the 3 days, or it proves that the 3 days should be retained. It's up to you. But, you know, there is information out there, and I just thought I'd bring that to you so you can determine what you think of that. Maybe you already knew. I suspect you probably didn't. The Irish Independent. Right. Obviously, we are hopefully seeing an end to the conflict in the Middle East. It's going to take a long time for oil prices to come down, unfortunately, because the Iran modus operandi was to actually attack the oil infrastructure. And that's really, I think, where they got the upper hand. So there is an issue in terms of oil generation. That being said, a fifth of our oil comes from Iran. The reason diesel has gone down is we've found ulterior alternative markets to get the diesel in here. It's not because of what's happened in the Middle East. So, you know, the prices might come down quick or they might not. But what we have to prepare ourselves for is the elimination of the cuts to the excise on petrol and diesel, because it could go down to 160 and then go up to 180 overnight or even 190 overnight. But the energy minister, our old friend here in Donegal, Dara O'Brien, he said he's open to extending excise cuts to petrol and diesel that are to expire at the end of July. He said it's too early to say whether a deal reached between the US and Iran to bring the war to an end will have an impact on prices at the pump or whether there'll be greater certainty. The minister also acknowledged that it would be politically hard sell to have a cliff edge on the excise cuts for fuel at the same time that a VAT cut for the hospitality sector comes into effect. So you introduce something and then you have to figure out how to unintroduce it, I suppose. Well, what's the chances of peace in the Middle East? US President Donald Trump, this is from the Irish Times, US President Donald Trump has expressed frustration with Israel and its Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at a gathering of world leaders in France for the G7, describing the country as hindering the peace efforts with Iran. Washington has announced that a preliminary deal with Iran to end hostilities will be signed in Geneva on Friday. But Tehran has insisted that Israel must stop its attacks in Lebanon for the agreement to hold. In remarks to media after a meeting with the Emir of Qatar, which has played a mediation role in negotiating with Iran, Trump expressed unusually sharp criticism of Israel. And we got some leaked texts from some of his conversations with Benjamin. And his patience seems to be wearing thin. I wonder, would you back our councillors in Donegal if they made this decision? Because councillors have passed a motion calling on the government to make all GEA Championship games available on free-to-air TV in 2027. This is the Irish Daily Star. Rights for the All-Ireland Football and Hurling Championship are currently split between RTE and GAA+, the association's own streaming service. This weekend, three of the four All-Ireland Football quarter-final round three games will be shown on the streaming service, with just Dublin versus Donegal being shown on RTE. The GAA and RTE have both repeatedly claimed that it would be unfeasible to show all games, yet many have pointed to how every League of Ireland game can be streamed on League of Ireland TV, though it's the quality. They use camera tracking technology and stuff, which is not fantastic. Listen, I think really the truth is that we are going to have to pay to view at times. I think the public might go for it if they see it fair, and they might go for it if they see all of the games available so that they can interact with them. Right, so the Dáil will vote on Sinn Féin's proposed legislation to remove the three-day wait period for an abortion in early pregnancy. If the bill is passed in the Dáil tonight, it then goes before an Oireachtas committee for further scrutiny. We have two guests to discuss this. I'll go first to the Sinn Féin spokesperson on health, Deputy David Cullinan. Thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
Right, so why has Sinn Féin brought this forward?
Well, first of all, there was an independent review of the 2018 Act, which was voted overwhelmingly by the people of this state back in 2018 to provide abortion services. And that independent review looked at the operation of the Act, Greg, and looked at potential barriers that prevented some women from accessing services. And my party position has always been clear that obviously people voted for appeal, people voted for a legal framework to be put in place to allow abortion in certain circumstances. And as we know, in the first trimester up to 12 weeks, it's without indication. And one of the barriers that was identified by the independent experts that looked at this was the mandatory element of the three-day wait. And I just want to make a number of quick points around that, because I respect the fact that there are many different opinions on the issue of abortion. I respect people's different views. I engaged with people very extensively on this back in 2018 during the campaign. But I'm very mindful that there are some women who will come at all of these issues in their own time and need to be given the space and time to do so. So the fact that this legislation removes the mandatory element of the three-day wait does not mean that a woman cannot have a second appointment or even a third or fourth appointment if that's what they need. Every woman should be entitled to and supported to make a decision that's best for them. And if a woman decides after a first consultation or even a second consultation that they want to continue with the pregnancy, that of course is a matter for that woman, and she should be fully supported. I don't think there is any evidence of any GP who would coerce a woman into having an abortion. So this is about trusting women to make a decision for them. But I've also spoken to women who, for example, are in coercive relationships, people who are victims of sexual assault, and the mandatory element of that three-day wait was a real barrier to those people getting a second appointment with a GP.
How did that manifest itself? So, you know, if you're in a coercive relationship or what have you, how is the mandatory three-day period been a barrier?
Well, obviously, if you're in a coercive relationship, then there is a lot of control. Mm. It can be very difficult for a woman to get a GP appointment, never mind a second appointment. And obviously, the dynamic in a coercive relationship is control is a big part of it.
No, I understand that. You set that up, though, that there would have been a first appointment. So I'm just curious if you, because the only way this is relevant is if there is a first appointment. Because your first appointment would be an abortion otherwise. So you mentioned a coercive relationship and the people you've spoken to, what happened between that first appointment and in those 3 days that means that this three-day period needs to be gotten
rid of? So first of all, we have to be clear about what happens here. So not every woman will have an abortion on the first appointment. In fact, the evidence is that many women who go to a first appointment do so to have a consultation with their GP. And in fact, many may decide not to have an abortion and continue with the pregnancy, and I fully support the woman in making that choice. The evidence that was presented to the independent panel, which actually did look at women who were availing of the services, and there was a survey carried out at a point in time, pointed to problems with the mandatory three-day wait. Part of it was women in coercive relationships. Part of it was that there were some women who found out that they were pregnant much later. And that the time gap between getting the first and second appointments meant that they timed out of accessing a service within 12 weeks. And there was a range of reasons why that was problematic, but it was clearly seen as a barrier and an impediment to some women accessing the services that the people of this state democratically voted for back in 2018. But equally, and I respect all the different opinions, if a woman decides to have a second appointment, that should be facilitated. The issue here is the mandatory element of it and setting out in law that you must have this 3-day wait. And,
between,
and also, by the way,
2019 and 2024, 10,500 women attended an initial abortion consultation. They didn't return for the second appointment or after the third day. Now, that could be for some of the reasons that you've outlined. They had that conversation and even without the 3-day period may not have returned. But you could also look at those figures another way and say that this was an opportunity for a woman to reflect and to make a decision, and that there are potentially 10,500 children alive today that may not be, or at least a proportion of those may not be, if Sinn Féin is successful in eliminating this 3-day mandatory wait.
Well, I think that would assume then that in circumstances where the mandatory element of the 3-day wait was not there, that somehow women would be coerced by a GP to have a termination.
Not
I don't
coerced.
Think that
no,
is
no,
tenable at all.
Choice, but you're asking us to assume a lot as well. I'm just putting a counter-assumption to you.
No, but and I'm putting it back to you that I trust women to make decisions for them. And in fact, I've engaged with the department on this issue and they're very clear that that 10,000 figure, which has been used by some who oppose this legislation, in fact, oppose the 2018 Act, that this, in all circumstances, these are women who changed their minds. And,
well,
and
I haven't framed it that way.
No, I'm not saying you have. I'm saying others have in the Dáil Chamber yesterday. Some of it is women may have had a miscarriage, unable to get a GP on time. As I said, late finding out that they were pregnant and timed out. They may have gone another route for an abortion, and obviously those in coercive relationships. So there's no data that can suggest that in all circumstances a woman would have went on to have a pregnancy simply
no
because
data
they didn't.
Also, there's no data suggest that you say you trust women, but you know people can be in very distressing situations and it might take one or two consultations to see the woods for the trees. So, you know, we can't presume that every single woman in what, and some of these could be crisis pregnancies, has absolute clarity to make that decision. Like, say, for instance, Belgium and Germany have had abortion for decades upon decades and they also retain this. Why aren't we looking at what works in other countries over a long period of time?
Well, I think there are different regimes in different countries. Some are much more liberal, by the way, than the regime we have in Ireland, and some may be more restrictive. Obviously, we have a legal framework that was voted on in 2018.
But Germany is liberal, but still retains this 3 days.
Yeah. But if I can make my point, I do trust women, Greg. And more than that, this is not simply my recommendation. This was a product of a very thorough independent review that looked at what barriers were in place to enable women to access services. And I think that in circumstances where a woman wants a period to reflect, wants a second appointment or even a third appointment, that should be encouraged and that should be facilitated. And that should never be removed or not afforded to a woman. So I think we just need to be very clear about that, and I'm very conscious that each and every woman has to come at this in their own time.
Okay, well, let's
but
hear from
it's
a
the
woman.
Mandatory Mary, element of it that is the difficulty.
Mary T. Sweeney is a campaign director for Donegal Pro Life, an all to an aim to Donegal rep. You've heard the reasoning there from Deputy Cullen. Anne, what's your view?
I think that it's a tragedy what's unfolding in front of our eyes, and that with respect to Deputy Cullen and his party, Sinn Féin, that it's actually disingenuous of them to bring forward even this. Because the fact that they have never, in the review that was conducted, spoken to one woman that are never even attempted to contact and make have a liaison with the woman that didn't go back for that second opinion. And that's the telltale in this story, is that there was no honest, conscious effort to make a reach out to gather the data to see why women are going pursuing abortion. What has made them consider that as an option, number one, and number two, why did they decide? What supports were put in place that they didn't proceed to go back for the second abortion? The stats we have are from the government-funded NGO, the National Women's Council, where in 2019, 375 Irish residents travelled for abortion to the UK. The reality is that that means not there for the majority of women nowadays. And these women that he's talking about are 16, 17, 18, 19 years of age, having multiple abortions with a tablet that you do not have to go to the doctor
Do
for.
you have evidence to that effect, though,
Your
Mary T?
behavior was totally
Mary T,
disingenuous.
what evidence do you have that, teenagers are going back for multiple abortions?
I've spoken to teenagers. I talked to teenagers.
You spoke to teenagers in Donegal that have had multiple abortions?
That have had multiple abortions. And you know the tragedy? I've also spoken to young mothers in Donegal that because earlier a child had been taken by Tusla, they're now having to go for an abortion because Tusla has threatened to take another child and live another child. Are you
but
really...
What's the, but the conversation tonight is with respect about this three-day wait. Why do you believe that's important to retain rather than broadening out the whole conversation about abortion? Because if someone has got, if someone's going to have multiple abortions, they'll wait the 3 days anyway. Go ahead.
Because most important, the data is there, self-explanatory. The woman that did not go back to have procured the full abortion.
Yeah, but we don't know if they are women that would not go back if there wasn't the cooling off period as well. You see, we don't have that data.
Well, this is why I'm saying it's disingenuous of the government and Sinn Féin, who cannot be trusted. This is a party that cannot be trusted, that have flip-flopped on so many different issues between the hate speech on the definition of woman in the Constitution. You know, in respect, you stood up and said that you agreed with the Supreme Court in the UK stating what a woman is, a biological female, and then you were reprimanded and had to apologise and withdraw your comment. Like, that is terrible that you're under such pressure from your party leader. You have no right to dissent. You have no right to stand up and tell what you really hear from the women on the streets, that you're having to project a view from your party that you've no control over.
David, do you want to come back on that? I know you have to head to an appointment or something or other. You do have
to... Well, listen, Greg, there's lots of political charges which were made, which I will completely ignore because I don't think that this debate is served by those political charges. People can make their own minds up about me and about Sinn Féin and indeed about AIM too. And obviously when there's elections, people can vote for who they trust. I topped the poll in two elections, in the last two elections in Waterford, because people do trust me. But in relation to this wider issue of abortion, I respect the fact that Mary has a completely different view to me. I've engaged with many people who have similar views to Mary, and I think that a respectful debate on these issues always serves as well. In fact, there was many contributions last night in the Dáil, people who oppose the legislation, and they made their comments in a very respectful way. And I do respect the fact that Mary and others have a different view. But I have to listen to women and I do have to trust women.
Do you have to listen to us, though? We made a decision in 2018 and we voted. A set of proposals were put to us and we voted. And some people made a difficult decision to vote for abortion. And now what we're seeing really effectively is and for many people, it's actually going to further erode their interest in democracy. Now we're seeing you guys come together and decide that, well, you know, the people voted for this in 2018, but we've listened to a few people and now we're going to do something else. You're widening the scope. We didn't vote for that in 2018. And it could be on this issue or any issue.
Yeah, I don't think with respect, Greg, it's listening to a few people. It's listening to women who have availed of the service and who have identified.
In comparison to a nation going to a referendum.
Yeah, and I'll get to that point. But what I'm saying is it's important to listen to people who have availed of services and women who feel that there are impediments to other women accessing services. But listen, on those wider issues, when the Act was published and the bill was published in advance of any vote, it was made very clear that there would be an independent review that would look at what potential blocks or barriers may exist in time and if those blocks existed, that recommendations would be made to make legislative change.
The way you frame that by default is clearly, and you've just framed it yourself about a widening of it, rather than saying we also might say, well, maybe we need 5 days. You know what I mean? It seems to be the default position was the wording of the referendum was to allow for greater access to abortion.
Because,
what,
Greg,
about,
the term,
what about
the
looking at other countries that do 5 days?
But Greg, the terms of reference for the independent review was that it had to make recommendations and they had to keep in line with the spirit of the Act. So the report and the author was not able to stray from that. There was a very clear set of recommendations that was given. And what she looked at was, we voted in 2018 for a legal framework. Are there any barriers in place that prevent some women from accessing services within the scope of that Act? And the 3-day wait and the mandatory element of it was cited as one of the biggest barriers.
Yes, but the barrier,
and that was
what you describe as a barrier, people voted on as actually being the potential to limit, if you know what I mean. Not limit, but it was...
Yeah, but also...
People voted. I didn't vote in the referendum, but people didn't vote for this as a barrier. They voted for it so that abortion could be acceptable to them. But you're describing what they thought, right, OK, if there's a three-day waiting period, I can vote for this. You're describing that as a barrier now to access to healthcare.
Can I just...
I'll come back to you in a second,
just,
Mary T.
Because just very quickly... Chair, some people who voted for appeal had a difficulty with the three-day wait from the get-go. So it's not as straightforward as you make out. I'm not saying that there should be no cooling-off period or women should be rushed into having an abortion or women should not be able to arrive at this in their own time, or indeed that a woman should not continue with a pregnancy. For any woman that wants to have a second appointment or even a third or a fourth appointment with a GP, that should be facilitated and encouraged.
Okay.
And no woman should in any way feel rushed. What we're talking about here is women who have made their minds up and for all sorts of reasons finds that the mandatory element of this three-day wait has acted as a barrier. That's simply what we're looking at.
Okay, I would like. We don't have time. I want it to be described to me how it's a barrier. But anyway, we'll do that another day. Thank you. That's Deputy David Cullinan. Now, I want to give you your time as well, Mary T. I mean, obviously, because David had to go to a second appointment, if we could avoid personal attacks on him. Not that you do that, right? And we can talk about it more generally. But sorry, you wanted to come back in there.
I think it's very important to ask people to actually go today and phone their TDs. Irrelevant who you vote for, to please ask them to not support this because of the fact that David Cullinan, in his own Dáil report here, I'm quoting directly from him, he said this is a straightforward and targeted bill. It does just one thing. And in the same paragraph, like 15 lines down, he says there may be a number of technical amendments needed by government when this bill comes to committee stage. Then we look and we see that the Minister for State, who spoke on behalf of Deputy Emer Higgins, who spoke on behalf of the Minister for Health, Jennifer Carol McNeill, goes on and just, she does clarify that the current model of care is safe and effective. So the reality is either it's safe and effective or it's not safe and effective.
Can we or should we not trust women, Mary T., to make the right decision for themselves? If abortion is legal in this country, whether people like it or not, and the majority of people in Donegal didn't vote in favour of this, and I accept that, should we not trust women to know themselves that before they go for that initial consultation, that they've given this great consideration and that they believe that this is the right thing for them? Why should we not trust them?
Greg, for two reasons. Number one, because a woman in pregnancy can become a very different woman and in a broken relationship or in an unsteady relationship or in a situation where they're very young. To find out that they're pregnant, it can be, I've seen it with students, being afraid to go home and tell the parents, being afraid to, the boyfriend has rejected them. We must look at the real causes. That's why the statistics need to be carried out. Data has to be kept. If you want to genuinely support women to have a pregnancy and to keep the pregnancy, the 10,000 odd women that did go forward and didn't proceed with the abortion, and there's no data on it. It's disgraceful. They spend 10.8 billion annually in Ireland, the government, on NGO groups, and none of them fund support for women in crisis pregnancy that want to retain or keep their baby. Yeah. So the whole argument here is a flawed, controlled argument when he admits that they never spoke the Marie O'Shea, who did this survey for the government, it was, you know, you pay the piper, you get the tune. The survey never even discussed or sought to research or talk to the ladies that had initiated the abortion procedure and didn't complete it. We need to know those stats.
Yeah, but those stats might not. You see, those stats might not work on your favour, Mary T, because, you know, if the three-day wait was gone, you know, maybe 14,000 women would turn up for the first consultation and not return. We don't know the influence of the three-day wait
offered in this government by society. You have to be very concerned about this, that there's absolutely no absolute funding of any description to support women on the other side that want to retain and keep their baby.
But there is. There's child benefits. There's... do you know what? There's a study out today whereby baby banks. There's calls for a massive public investment in baby banks. So, you know, in fairness, it's not just a call coming from you, and it's by coincidence, and it's from a completely different organisation, that people are having babies and they literally don't have the money to feed them. So I presume that's the space that you're talking about. So
in fairness, I put this forward for, as others did, to look to introduce basic structures like introducing maternity pay from 4 months of pregnancy, that you can start to gather fund. It's so expensive today. The cost of living is a huge, we know by the stats that have been gathered internationally that 85% of women is socioeconomic. Cost of living is affecting it terribly.
And just see that issue too of bringing in coercive control of women. Like, that argument I don't think is fully thought out, because we don't know how many women are coerced into having an abortion, but we don't know how, or we don't know how many women are coerced into keeping a child. But whichever of those scenarios it is, it's against the woman's wishes. So if you're going to bring coercion in, well, then we need to make sure that we have some idea of how many women feel they're being coerced into an abortion, and this 3-day wait would work in their favour to maybe seek some alternative help or support. So, you know, the data does seem incomplete.
Greg, you've hit the nail on the head on one of the most important areas of development, that if a lady does manage to get into a GP, because she doesn't no longer need to have to present to the GP, it can be on the telephone. So there could be somebody in the room with her, you know, forcing her to make that conversation to officially get over the first of the two steps. But if the GP was to say to that lady, listen, are you okay? Are you safe enough at home? And she happened to say, no, I am, you know, under control by my partner and I need to get out, but I have nowhere to go. What support can that GP give that lady? What facilities have we, refuges have we for emergency accommodation for women that are pregnant? There is no and has been no willingness to look at the real issues. And I have seen women been having to force to stay in the home because they have nowhere to go. There is no support.
Okay, well,
the biggest case in Ireland, just to mention it before,
briefly, if you don't mind, Mary T,
is the case with Urana Dickey here in Letterkenny. And that, where did he get those tablets? You know, where is the reality that these tablets
Not an argument for controlled healthcare, though? I'm not sure that's
You know what I'm saying? There's no willingness to invest in the funding around this whole situation. It has become, and not to mention the fact that over 108 babies were born alive following the abortions, because all the abortions where babies survive are the later term abortions because the babies are bigger. And
but we are talking specifically about early pregnancy, but I do understand where you're coming from. Thank you. Mary T. Sweeney, who's campaign director for Donegal Pro-Life, ain't do Donegal Rep. Listen, I'm not a woman, and it's not really for me to interfere in women's healthcare one way or other. The one part of this that I think we should discuss going forward is, you know, what we're actually voting for in a referendum, for an example, be it on this issue or even, say, for instance, it was the triple lock. You know, could we vote on the triple lock, and within that, you know, we're not going to get that vote, but within that, there could be a pathway actually for the Dáil to vote to go against the will of the people, per se. Or maybe we should accept and understand that we vote for a framework, and we also vote for that framework to be explored and to be changed, and so on and so forth. As I say, it's a very complex issue. I don't know where to stand. All I can do is sit here and try and give people their voice, whether they're for or against. We are joined now in studio by Hugh Harper. Good morning, Hugh. Thank you so much for calling in to us on your way to Dublin. I do appreciate it.
Morning, Greg.
And we also have Christine Evans. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning.
Christine, for those of you who are not aware, she worked in the deli of the shop and also lived in the apartments directly above the premises, of course, that was the horrific scene of the devastating, tragic explosion, which caused so much loss and devastation. Hugh, you are amongst a group heading to Dublin, to Leinster House. You've been working with Sinn Féin on this. And, you know, we've spoken in the past, and I've spoken to Donna in the past about being heard, okay, and, you know, being spoken to. We'll all remember the comments from the minister, won't we, that he's not the minister for sympathy or whatever way he phrased it. How important is it to get down there and speak to legislators?
I think at this stage it's crucially important. It's vital now that we take this opportunity and make the most of it. We have put our arguments and our concerns to the Minister of Justice. He has taken them on board, but we are still waiting on some substantial and concrete investigation that's going to take into account what has not been included in the criminal investigation or won't be included in the criminal investigation.
And I suppose this comes down to timing. The government has seemed indicated that it is willing to conduct the type of inquiry that you're looking for, but they seem to be of the view that they want the Garda investigation to run its course.
Greg, history is kind of repeating itself here. The Stardust families were given the same promises, and 40-odd years later, they're still fighting the cause. I don't want to be in that situation. We're trying to be proactive. We're trying to work with government. We're trying to come to some kind of agreement with them. But at the end of the day, government, previous and present, are the people that are responsible for the safety of the protection of the people of the country.
What is it about? Is it about getting answers as to, you know, not necessarily who was at fault, but what went wrong? How was it allowed to go wrong? Was it a complete sort of, was there, how do I put this, you know, was there, did people not necessarily do things correctly, or was this just happenstance or whatever? How much of it is that? How much do you need those answers, and why might that be important?
Everything you've mentioned, Greg, is vitally important. But what has not been recognised here is the potential failings of previous governments. That has come to light, that has omissions been made in regard to the new amendment being brought forward to the Gas Safety Bill 2026. It clearly states in that amendment that since 2016, the CRU had known and been notified of serious concerns regarding gas safety, particularly and specifically to unlicensed third-party gas network.
So do you think there's a resistance to a open, transparent, public, statutory, public judicial inquiry because there might be some afraid of what it might uncover?
That's the only way I can see it now at the minute, Greg. You know, again, we've been watching this amendment bill, myself and Donna, now since the explosion, and the question has to be asked. Since 2016, they've known about these issues. Government hadn't acted to bring forward the recommended legislation and regulation that the CRU needed. So why has it been done now?
Christine, you're a survivor of this tragedy, and Hugh's a survivor as well, but he was also bereaved in it. Yes. You're going to do something that's actually, I presume, going to be very difficult for you. You're going to deliver a speech in the AV room at Leinster House. What are the key things that you want to get across, that you want to land with the people down there?
I suppose I want them to understand what it's been like to survive. You know, the explosion happened. I survived. I'm alive and I'm very grateful. But it has come at a cost. And also to reiterate the fact that I am supporting the families by looking for this public judicial inquiry. Because at the end of the day, I had a right to feel safe in my home. I also had a right to feel safe in my workplace. I wasn't safe, you know, so I will be looking again alongside the families for this public judicial inquiry. I want to know what happened. I need to know what happened.
Yeah, that's it. This is a visceral situation. This is like, God forbid, if someone dies in hospital and there's some question marks about the treatment towards the end of that person's life, mm-hmm. they will move heaven and earth to try and get the answers mm-hmm. of that. And it's something very hard to put into words as to why that's so important, isn't
it? That's exactly it, Greg. It's very hard to put into words. It's a deep-rooted desire kind of thing. I need to know what happened.
And is this because this felt like it was done to you? If you know what I mean. I'm not saying like a willful act.
Yeah,
but no. You need to know as to, you know, why you
where
found
the failures
yourself.
Were, yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah. Why 49 years of my life was just totally devastated and destroyed. You know, we, as a mother, you know, we all keep keepsakes like the first tooth and, you know, the first school report and, you know, the first little painting from play school. All of that's gone. I have 5 children and all of that is gone, and that's been hard. But in saying that, they are material things. I survived it, 10 people didn't.
In a way, survival,
but there's a
too,
guilt, there's a guilt to that. There's a terrible, terrible guilt to it.
Survivor's guilt, yes. Effectively. And then the whatabouts, what if I stood there? Yeah. What if I was here? Why did... I'm not trying to traumatise you, don't
the
get me wrong.
The fact that I was standing 2 inches in the position I was standing, I survived, yes. You know. Yeah.
And that is not the cold comfort that people who have not been through it might think it is.
No, no, definitely not.
Yeah, okay. Hugh... Do you think, though, the government position is set now, that they are going to wait? Because I think the families are relatively satisfied or very satisfied with the Garda investigation, the level of communication, how that is progressing. But, you know, that could be years, couldn't it? And you want the search for answers to begin now.
There's two ways of answering that. I'm extremely happy with the way the Garda investigation is going. Yes, it is coming into 4 years, but it's a complex situation. In regard to government, delaying their establishment of an inquiry, it's not helping in the way of public safety, if I can word it rightly.
So do you believe that what potential gaps may have been there that may have contributed to this tragedy
exactly.
are still there, and there are other buildings that arguably could be ticking time bombs?
Well, looking deeper into the Gas Safety Amendment Bill of 2026, when I go back in time, it's very clear to see that within the CRU, 100 unlicensed premises were identified.
Mm.
But now there's a grandfather clause in this amendment. You know, has given a passage of time to other unlicensed networks to come in to and bring their standards up to date with at the minute, there is no legislation or regulation to say what has to be where it has to be and what the standard is. So delaying this is not helping. When you consider the legislation that lacked the knock on effect that would have had to. Dangerous substance license applications and granting of that safety risk statements and creating that, you know, this has a ripple effect.
It should also be pointed out, I think, too, that, you know, there's no guarantee this type of inquiry would happen if it wasn't for victims and those bereaved to actually be pushing for this, if you know what I mean. It's not a fait accompli that the such an inquiry would ever take place. Christine, how much of this is about that sort of visceral search for answers? And also, too, about doing everything that you can as part of this collective to try and prevent any other family or group of families having to go through what yous are going through. Because if you're not directly affected by this, it's very easy to move on.
Yeah, and it's very hard to understand unless you've actually been in this position, you know. But I think the main reason I'm so focused on trying to find out exactly what happened is to prevent it from happening again. Like, as it stands, I walk into every building now and the first thing I do is I look for the fire exits. I look at the radiators. I'll consciously look to see, I wonder what, is that gas or electric? You know, all these things go through my head. And that I carry with me every day, everywhere I go.
Yeah.
You know, it's part and parcel of the trauma now. You know, my safety is gone. I don't feel safe anymore anywhere I go. Mm. So these are things that are a knock-on effect of being a survivor of an explosion.
Christine Evans, Hugh Harper, safe journey down to Dublin.
Thank you very much.
I know actually even going through this process in and of itself is very tough. Mm. You know, to go up and you're going to have to open up yourself really to that room, aren't you, Christine? So
yes.
We'll be thinking on you.
Okay, thank you.
Because I know tonight's not going to be easy and Hugh too. I understand your situation, of course, very well. So I know what you're doing is not easy. So I think we appreciate it. And I think anyone who will hopefully in the future avoid going through something like this would appreciate it as well. Thanks very much, both of you. Safe
thank
journey
you
down.
Thank
That's
you.
Christine Harper. And Christine Evans and Hugh Harper.
Now, message from the Road Safety Authority.
I beg your pardon. Members of the Donegal Bar Association have met to confirm their opposition to proposed reforms of the criminal legal aid system by the Department of Justice. Local practitioners have confirmed they're now going to withdraw from all emergency court sittings and providing advice during Garda Station interviews, which might be particularly coming up to this weekend. We'll tease that out with Rory O'Brien, who is a Donegal solicitor. Rory, thank you so much for your time. Good morning to you.
Hi, Craig. Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Right, OK. So what are the changes, before we talk about the potential impacts, Rory, what are the changes that that you are resisting?
OK, so there has been... There's obviously the issue in terms of applying for legal aid. And that's for individuals, Greg, who don't have sufficient means to discharge their legal expenses when they're faced with accusations before the court. Now, this is a system which has been in place for 65 years. It is a mandated system by the state to ensure equality, that where individuals are prosecuted, they have a right to competent representation equal to the resources that the state have. And obviously, as years have gone on, those figures have fluctuated. And then what happened is we hit a crescendo or a point, a crystallization point in 2008. Now, obviously, the crash happened. Financial emergency monies and legislation were brought into effect. And solicitors that engaged in this field throughout the country received the cuts, as did every other public sector worker. And that was certainly something that we all got on board with. We all understand and we all appreciated the situation everybody was in the country at the time. However, since that period of time, there hasn't been a return to the fees which were payable in 2008. So what has been ongoing for the last number of years is discussions between the Criminal Law Committee of the Solicitors Group and the Department of Justice regarding the return to the 2008 figures, so 18 years ago figures, despite the fact that inflation has obviously increased by 25%. So we were looking for normal restoration, nothing more than that. And then in February of this year, the minister, without any notice to our solicitors representative group, made a pronouncement that they were going to impose now a flat rate fee.
And just in relation to that, because I think what's actually been interesting in this process, Rory, if you don't mind me saying so, is the public getting sight of some of the figures that we're talking about. And just for handiness, I'm going to slightly round it up. So at present, solicitors in district court are paid around about €240 for each accused first appearance, then around about €60 on each subsequent appearance. Now, the new proposal has calls for a €455 flat one-off fee. Now, that means, too, that if the defendant is in court seven times, rather than getting seven times by 60, it eventually that 455 gets eaten up. And after that, effectively, you could argue you're doing work for free. Is it a case that in the majority of cases, there are more than the three subsequent appearances or whatever it might be to bring you up to that 455, Rory?
Okay, so there are roughly about 350,000 cases in the district court in 2024. So you can imagine there's a wide type of cases that we all deal with. And in some circumstances, the argument is made by the department themselves that the €450 rate when you're dealing with matters that resolve after a day or two is more beneficial, if you want to look at it like that. However, the reality of the situation is the flat rate fee model doesn't fully take into account the more serious nature of matters. So there are actually three rates that are being suggested here, Greg. But €450 for an individual who was brought before the court and could be before the court 6, 7, 10, 20 times is effectively asking a solicitor to appear to deal with the matters. And it's not an administrative matter that you deal with on an adjourned date. There is never just simply we stand up. There is always a issue that has to be resolved. And the court will be impressing upon both ourselves and the prosecution to deal with matters correctly, quickly, expeditiously. What the department want, though, however, is they want to create a scenario where €450 is to be payable regardless of every aspect of every singular case.
But what's really quite... situation. You could argue, though, that this is really quite clever, because what it would do is draw a line under any potential for restoration, because this would be a whole new mechanism. And then any calls for the cuts back in the day to be restored obviously then almost becomes defunct, because these have signed up to a completely new mechanism. So it is... I'm not sure if this was the motivation, but it is quite clever.
You've hit the nail on the head, Greg, and I appreciate your ability to discern that fact, which is something that we as a profession have recognised. That is exactly what it is. It is a cut in perpetuity. that the department are now seeking to single out. If we can give you another model that's being considered, Greg, and this would be something of interest to your listeners. One of the suggestions is that where a defendant comes before the court charged with what's known as a non-minor offence, so that is a case which can be prosecuted both at the district court level and at the higher courts, usually the circuit, or indeed for any allegations of a serious sexual crime or murder before the Central Criminal Court. The suggestion is because the matter will be leaving the district court system and proceeding to the higher courts, a flat rate fee of 100 euros should be payable to the solicitor. Now, the argument from the department presumably is, well, look, you're going to be paid in the circuit and the central, so therefore, why should you receive any more? But when you think of the reality of what that case actually looks like, more often than not, where a serious crime, there would be a bail objection. That could be lengthy. That involves the taking of instructions, the receiving of a bail pack, cross-examining Garda members, making submissions to the court. Individuals either remanded in custody or not. They'll be remanded while directions are awaited from the state. And this is a particular issue for ourselves, that the vast majority of adjournments are not defence related. They are so the stakeholders, i.e. the Guardian, the DPP, can get their proper directions, can have their files received, and all charges can be preferred.
Everyone,
that lasts 10 yeah, times.
Everyone's so entitled to a defence. But I don't know, you know more than this than me, but I know in America there's a similar system here, and what we get is plead, plead, plead. So in other words, you know, maybe the person doesn't get the representation that they deserve. This is a difficult thing for me to say because I'm sure, and I know solicitors are very ethical and all that type of stuff, right? But surely a culture could find itself creeping in whereby, you know, solicitors, even if it's not necessarily in the absolute best interest of the person they represent, to try and get things wrapped up as quickly as possible, and find yourself going, well, if you you know, if you admit to this, we can avoid that, and so on and so forth. Is there any possibility that type of a culture subconsciously could find itself being introduced into the Irish system if it's not already there?
The two features that you've highlighted are things we are very concerned about. One is the access to justice for everybody. And particularly in our community, Greg, where we are Donegal, we're often called the forgotten county, where people's income levels are not the same across the country. The idea that an individual would be accused of a crime and then have that additional worry of how are they going to fund their defence, their right to a fair trial. And that doesn't necessarily mean how do we get them off. That means how do they engage with the case? How do solicitors advise and represent their interests? So the one aspect that we have to be worried about is this dilutes that access to justice, what the department are doing. And secondly, what you've also indicated is there is a concern. Now, fortunately, myself and the colleagues around here do not engage and do their job absolutely to the best of the ability. And from my experience, we are some of the best solicitors in the country up here. But to incentivize somebody to plead guilty because of the fact, and that's what you're highlighting, that is a real concern that could creep in relation to this matter, given the fact that there is no desire to see a case adjourned repeatedly. Also, Greg, and I'm sure your listeners have commented on this before, is the difficulties in accessing civil legal aid, family law district court. This is a model that we already have in place. And it is a model that has already proven to be completely dysfunctional, whereby individuals faced with very difficult family law circumstances cannot access a solicitor because there is no solicitors on the private practitioner legal aid scheme, which account for 70% of cases before the family law courts.
Yeah.
So we've already seen and tested a flat rate model. We've already seen it does not work.
Right. So what's going to be the implications? This is a busy weekend. I'm not sure if it's by accident or design. There can be special court sittings. It's all about getting people rounded up and through the courts as soon as possible. And that's seen as a deterrent. And the less people that are rounded up and through the courts, the better. But you are, Donegal solicitors, en masse, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, disengaging in terms of, you know, emergency court sittings or indeed providing advice during Garda station interviews. And I presume then that encroaches on how long they can be held and all the consequences that come from that. Is that action in place now? And in your experience, Rory, what are the consequences of it?
Okay, it's not by design. We are following effectively what other colleagues throughout the country were doing up until late last week. So it's a coincidence that has occurred during the rally weekend. And the really reason behind this is it is a protest action, there's no doubt about it. And it's to identify, hopefully through the various stakeholders, i.e. the Gardaí, the court service, the important role that we play in the administration of justice. The consequences of it are we are not going to be in a position to advise clients whilst they're detained in custody. That has implications because the ability to obtain legal representation and the right to a fair trial occurs from the time of arrest, not necessarily the time of charge. And the attendance at out-of-hours sitting is also to make it clear that we want the department to engage with us in relation to these issues. This issue can be easily resolved by the department by engaging with our representatives and having a fair consultation in relation to these proposals. So by taking ourselves out of that equation, and I should add, the rest of the country may have seen from the national news, is going that bit further at the moment where they've actually withdrawn from all matters as of today, tomorrow and Thursday. I think we're to have a discussion ourselves internally today as to what our next steps will be. But as it stands at the moment, we're not going to attend special sittings. If individuals are unfortunately brought before the system, or brought into the system, whether by arrest or by court, they will be without legal representation as it currently stands. If they are brought before a court sitting, the judge is there. We have excellent judges who will ensure that all of their rights are upheld and adhered. But that will be an issue that will have to be decided on every individual basis. Fortunately, though, Greg, I should say, over the last number of years as a practitioner who's been around Rally Weekend, the arrests have come down a little bit. Behaviour has improved. I would respectfully submit the Gardaí have an excellent model in place themselves to ensure there's a relatively fast processing of defendants. So hopefully, the disruption will be left to a minimum because none of us want this. We all want to just get back to work and doing our jobs as best we can.
Thanks so much for your time and the insight. And it's a whole another 10 minutes in how is this resolved and,
yes.
And would the status quo satisfy or is this an opportunity to reopen the restoration? And I don't think you or I have the time, but it's a complex matter. Thank
it
you. Look after
Thank
yourself.
You
bye-bye.
It.
Rory O'Brien, a solicitor there. Now, at 11 o'clock this afternoon, we've brought forward the release of this week's Greg Hughes podcast because of the weekend that's in it. And by the way, overwhelmed by the fact that our podcast now here, Highland Radio's Greg Hughes podcast, is in the top 20 podcasts right across the island of Ireland today, which is really quite remarkable considering we're up against the two Johnnies and all the big hitters. So listen, thank you so much for your continued support. It's really taken off and we appreciate that. And most of all, we appreciate our guests because they are often they're always very interesting and often have to be really honest, and we do appreciate it. Carolyn was our guest last week, and the response to that podcast has been absolutely huge. Well, in this week's episode, I sit down with the rally legend that is Gary Jennings for a conversation as is harrowing as it is inspiring. This is a guy really that should not be here by all accounts because he had a horror crash at the 2025 Cavan Stages rally, and it left him fighting for his life. Gary's future in the sport will be discussed, and his future in the sport at that time was just hanging in the balance. So we're going to talk about the crash, what he remembers of it. We're going to talk about, I suppose, almost like an out-of-body experience as he was in that. For a while, he was in that space between life and death. And he had a very interesting experience that has stayed very much with him. But there were people that landed on the scene who made sure it was life. And they got him back to life. And they looked at him, looked after him until the emergency services arrived. He was close to a hospital, which helped. But he suffered catastrophic injuries. And he's carrying those injuries today. It's an inspiring story, I have to say. It was recorded on Monday, and as of Monday, ahead of the rally, he had not sat in a rally car since the crash, and yet he's going to be taking part in the Donegal International Rally this weekend. And as I say, the chances, his medical professional says, not a chance. Well, look, he passed the medical, and here he is. So here's a short preview of the podcast, which will be available for you at 11.
How are you physically now? What's the hangover of the crash physically?
I think physically I'm still sore. I will be. But I think mentally I have to get over it. I think your head rules your body.
So, have you got into a rally car competitively since?
I haven't sat in a rally car yet. and today is Monday.
Yeah. We're recording this on Monday with the rally kicking off later this week. But, you know, with everything that's happened to you, why get into a rally car again?
Because it's what I live for. I don't drink, just social events. I don't smoke. I walk 7 days and
don't drink tea or coffee either, by the way. We learned that,
And I work 7 days and seven nights. Whatever business I have, I'm work there all the time. But what they do it for? When it boils down to it, this is what I do it for.
Who did you have to have that conversation with, though, about getting back into the car?
Well, I had several. A girl, Lisa, works with me mentally and physically, who's very, very good.
She'll leave that decision to you, will she?
100%.
But did she give you any guidance? Because I suppose she's working with your mind.
She did.
Like, because you have to drill down as to why you're doing this, right? Are you doing this? Are you doing this to prove something to yourself? Are you doing this because you really love it and you want to get back to it? You know, there's many reasons why. So I would imagine part of her job is to find out, well, why is Gary looking to get back into that car? Is it for the right reason?
Yes, without doubt. And I think the very first day that I met her, we had all these conversations and she was very positive. She says, you will, and you will, and you will. And that always stuck in my head.
Yeah.
Because the doctors actually told me I won't.
Mm.
But the mind overcomes the body. And I am 100% sure that I'm going to do it. And I will do it till my best ability. Will I be competitive again? No, I've been out for a year. But this time next year, I hope to be in a different frame of mind and be fit or competitive. Because as I explained before, you only have a window here.
Yeah.
And you've so long to get to the window. You're only so long in that window and then you're out of that window. And I just like being in that window and being competitive. And
You can't look back with regrets with what you've been through because, you know, people might say, well, you'd be mad to get back in a car. We shouldn't even be here.
Well,
so you'd almost be mad not to live your life responsibly, but you know what I mean.
100%. And like, I'm not, and please don't take this the wrong way. Of all the people that I know in this sport who tragically have left us, not one of them has had an accident like that there. Mm. It's on, you know, I'm not, and I know we think about Manus. I stopped up at his memorial garden yesterday. Like, his was just such a small accident and just the circumstances of it.
Just,
And Craig Breen's the same. Yeah. And, you know, for them families probably to see what I've gone through and really I've survived a bad leg and, you know, the cares that them poor people passed away on, there was nothing compared to what I have. So I'm very grateful for that and there's not a day I don't think about people that aren't getting a second opportunity. But when I get the second opportunity, I'm going to definitely make the best of it.
You guys have something in common though and you also go in with your eyes wide open. You know the risk, it's an inherent risk. It's the same as a jump jockey
100%.
Or anyone involved in sport. You hope it's not you or a downhill skier. Yeah. Pick your sport. You hope it's not you, but there is an acceptance, is there? There's an acceptance that, you know, that you could be, you know, killed or very seriously injured. As it turns out, you were seriously injured. Great to see you doing so well. But you all know.
Yeah. Look, I think everybody in life thinks about that. There's not a day you don't think about what could happen or what will happen. But we have no say over that. You know, we have to make the best of the time we have here. Rallying is a funny sport. And I do say to people, we don't hear about how many footballers break a leg or break an arm or rugby players who are paralysed. Laying the football or rugby.
Well, the brain injuries, the connection with Alzheimer's, you know.
You take all the rallies over Europe, there's not somebody injured every week. You know, compared to what we do, there's a very less chance of getting injured seriously injured.
Most intercounty footballers' knees and hips are banjacked at 40, like so.
That's right.
Yeah, because it's so controlled, it's so safe. I mean, the safety of that car. Now, if this was 30 years ago, or maybe even 20 years ago, listen, forget about it, right? But between the seats, the strapping, everything else, you know, that's why you're here.
Yeah.
And a dose of luck.
Yeah, and we have spoken in depth with Malcolm Wilson, who owns Ford M Sport in Cumbria. And we've sat over dinner and spoke about this car and spoke about the way it's broke and about all these things. That's what them cars are designed to do.
Mm.
When people look at this car and they say, that cage is broken 5 bits.
Mm.
Well, when they sit down and look at it, that's the way it's supposed
to be. That's the crumple zones we'd see on the road, on the road cars, wouldn't we?
And it does what it says on the tin. And I see for anybody, young people joining the sport, I think it's the safest sport you'll get. Compared to what we do, compared to anything else.
What I can't get my head around, though, as we record this a few days out from the rally, is that you're talking about getting back into the car now and you know what, maybe being competitive next year, but you haven't sat in a rally car since. So that make that make sense.
Not, I haven't even sat in.
Is that a choice? Like, are you waiting on the car to be delivered?
Yeah,
or what?
Well, I have had a lot of opportunities to, you know, we know Chris Meek did this test a few weeks ago and I was invited down to that, and my friend Conor McCross from KAS has a car sitting there ready to go and they've told me to come down, get in the car. But no, I am just happy to get in my own car.
Right.
My only problem is my broken sternum. When I put my hands device on, it probably will be in pain, but the doctors are very good to me. I'm getting a steroid injection tomorrow, which does help me because I get them. So I am just, I will drive within my capability. Correct,
yeah.
Answer. Mm. And I don't put anybody at risk. If I feel that I'm sore or it's not happening, it's not...
Can you trust yourself to make
I
that
I can
shout?
Respect myself to pull out.
Yeah?
I can go in and say, here, yeah. I'm too sore or I can't do this. I have no problem. I'll just pull out.
But you don't really know yet the effects of the G-force.
No, none of that. Mm. Like, if I sneeze or cough sitting here now, I'd have to hold myself.
Yeah.
So when I go to break into one of them chicanes, how's my body going to react? Mm. My mind knows what to do, but I don't know what my body's going to do.
To some extent, I imagine to keep you focused when you're racing like you're racing, there has to be a combination of concentration or maybe fear, survival. I don't know. You can tell me. You're the pro. How do you know that the fear or the concern that this could happen again won't affect how you perform?
Because my mind won't let me. My mind won't let me think about that.
Yeah.
I've had one accident in 30 years. You know, I have never been hurt. I have never been in an ambulance before. Ambulance, surely. I've been in ambulance when I was out water skiing. I've been in ambulance because I was farming. But this is a high sport, and I've never been unfortunate enough to have an accident. My mind, I'm saying this now, my mind will not think about that. I'm just focused and enjoying myself.
Great. And I hope it doesn't come across like I'm trying to plant these seeds here.
No.
It's just interesting, and it's an interesting insight into you and who you are and how you, you know, compartmentalize things. And we have to. Was the people around you trying to talk it out, or do they know who you are? And I'm not on about Lisa.
No, 100%. I've had this conversation with my mum and dad.
Yeah.
Who are very fortunate, are still with me. And I love them so much, but they have said to me, not to do it, but I can't. I think, it's a funny way to think. It's like
saying, don't be you.
That's right.
This is who you are, right?
This is who I am. Yeah. And, Lisa's told me before, Lisa spoke to me, I've got away with it.
Mm.
It'll not happen to me again. I will not step outside that comfort zone. I'll enjoy myself and I'll put a show on for the fans who are so, so good to me. I think the message I got in hospital, and I'm only seeing that message now because they're sending me a message now, good luck for this rally. And then I'm only saying that they were messing me when I was in hospital. But like, I was in morphine for 7 months. And I was in the Royal every Monday morning at 9 o'clock. And every other day I was in the hospital in Oma. So I had that much going on. I was replying to the message, but really I didn't understand.
You were in co-pilot.
I was,
autopilot, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
So like, I appreciate everybody's help and everybody's support. And I'm just glad to see that so many people are happy to see me back.
It's a fascinating conversation, you know. He got an ADHD diagnosis as part of that process, which we talk about, and that sort of makes quite a lot of sense to him in his school life, which we discuss. He as well as the injuries mentioned there, a catastrophic injury to his leg, and his leg is almost like a banister now. Do you know, like the what do you call those things that go up towards a banister? In that it is... There was an incident that happened as he was strung upside down in the car, and he talks about this, where antifreeze and hot water met together and literally cut through all of his protective gear and absolutely destroyed his leg. It's astonishing that he's the back the way he is. So it's a fascinating story on so many levels. And even if you don't if you're not interested in rallying, trust me, you will enjoy that. It's available for you from 11 o'clock on highlandradio.com, or just search the Greg Hughes podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Best wishes, Gary. Keep steady. You will do it. Never mind being competitive just yet. Have a good time and enjoy being there. Be great to see you both cross the ramp on Sunday, says a listener. Now, I want to say a very special happy birthday to Patrick Boyce. He's 70 today. He tunes into the show around about this time. Maybe I'm a little bit late with this request, but things just got very busy there at the moment. So from all of us here on the Greg Hughes Show, Patrick, and from all of those close to you, including Dean, have a wonderful birthday, Patrick. 70 years of age today. And also a request for my grandson, Shane O'Donnell, whose birthday it is today. And that's coming in from your loving granny, Granny Frances. Now, as we mentioned on the show a little earlier, it became clear last evening that there has been an advancement in the approval of Givanostat. It has been approved in Europe but and in the north. You could access it in Britain, but there was a bit of foot dragging here in Ireland. There's a number of boys with Duchenne muscular dystrophy who are actually still waiting, so let's not get ahead of ourselves for access to this drug. But it is now closer than it has ever been. And one of those families of one of those young lads we've been speaking to is young Aaron Langan. And we've tracked his story and we've all become incredibly invested with this absolute little fighter. But hopefully he'll get the help now from the state. Dermot is Aaron's dad. Hi, Dermot. Thanks so much for chatting to me.
How
I
you,
do
Craig?
Appreciate it.
How are you doing, Craig?
I'm good. Now, you're kind of in, and I want this to be measured, you're sort of in a space of uncertainty. We're closer to this drug, but there's still, I presume, has to be an assessment of Aaron as to if he'll qualify for it or what benefit it might actually have to him. But listen, without sort of getting to the point where it's available, you won't get those questions answered either.
No. Well, I suppose, firstly, it's a great step. Like, it's a real positive outcome for the Duchenne community, like, to have it available now in the country. I suppose, on a personal thing, we're waiting on the criteria to see who can get the drug, you know, and what definition of ambulance they're going to take, you know. So it's kind of, as positive it is, we're still in that wee bit of limbo to know whether we're going to get it or not, you know, for our son. So,
well, providing that it wouldn't be providing it wouldn't be harmful to Aaron, given the fact that you guys have been so important in this fight, you would hope that even if the criteria or the qualifying criteria are not exactly met, that Aaron would be very strongly considered for this drug.
Yeah, you would hope that, Craig. Like, all the, you know, we've been fighting for this last year, you know, and as we're saying, like, Aaron was walking not so long ago when it was approved in Europe. So you would hope, like, we're keeping our fingers crossed that we will get it. But I suppose it's down to the doctors now and the clinicians to maybe assess Aaron and see what value he'll get out of it, you know. But we're certainly hoping he will avail of it. Yeah.
You and your wife and family and friends have been campaigning, as you said, you were down in the Dáil. There seemed to be a bit of stagnation in the campaign, though yous never stopped. Then we saw this catapult to the point whereby it was raised in the Shannon by Senator Boyle, Pat the Coke Gallagher, Piers Doherty combined to raise the matter. The minister was questioned in the Dáil in relation to this. There's been videos made left, right and centre. The push over the last while has been absolutely huge. How has that felt for you, Dermot, as a dad and for the family as a whole and for Aaron, that there was such then this wave of action to try and get this over the line?
It was, Craig, was overwhelming. Like, to have that support in your community too, or even our local school and all other our senators, our TDs, like, they really got behind us. And, you know, it's very hard to put into words what it meant to us, but to have to go that far to get it pushed over the line, you know, it's something, it exposes your family a lot, you know. And I suppose to get this result today, it's amazing and shows what when the community comes together, what you can get, you know, and how it can work for you, you know. But as I say, we just still need to get that extra bit to make sure we're going to get it, you know, and keep the continued fight on now for the ambulatory definition, that they take the same criteria as they've taken in England and then other parts of Europe as well, you know.
Yeah, it can't be a hollow victory, can it? It has to be an inclusive victory. That's what this was all about, wasn't it? It was never a selfish campaign. It was always about what is best.
No.
And the majority and as many children as we can to get a benefit from this drug.
Yeah, definitely, we have to get as many children on it as possible. Like, you know, it wouldn't be fair for one child to get it, and just because one is slightly going off their feet or in a wheelchair, how do you explain that to your child? Like, yeah. You know, there is a treatment here now available, and it's proven to slow down. In America, they've given it to children non-ambulatory as well. Like, and it has proven to slow down the condition. So I don't see why here we're going to make a definition between two children, like, and even in the north they're giving it. So we have to push now that for as many children as possible that it, you can get the benefit of this, you know.
All right. Well, listen, well done, Dermot, to you, the family and the community. We really appreciate you coming on. As I say, we're nearly there. It's not just over the line yet, but we just hope that it's a proper victory and not a hollow victory. And part of the exposure you talk about, the family exposure, is talking to agents like me. But anyway, it's appreciated. Thank you very much. And we'll continue, obviously, to make our representations here.
Can I just thank a few people as well? The Manus Boyle, Pierce Doherty and Charles Ward, you know, they've kept pushing. They've been pushing this for this last months, number of months. And to his local school, to everybody that has supported us in any way and whatever means they did it, you know, we're so grateful. And to yourself, Craig, and the Highland Radio and the airtime you give us, just want to say a massive thanks to you all.
Yeah, well, as you say, we're of the community, we're part of the community, and that's my school too. And, you know, that's what we're here for, or else there's no point doing this. So, Dermot, listen, thank you. Well done to you. I hope it gives you your family a wee lift, a bit of hope, and that actually really what this is about is Aaron can have as full a life as is possible. That's what it was, to give him that chance.
That's the goal anyway, Craig, you know, and we hope for the best now that we'll get it.
Look after yourself. Love to all, Dermot. Thank you.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Right, let's talk. Let's listen to your talk on what we've been talking about. On the issue of abortion, this was the topic today that garnered most comment from you, the listener. Good morning, Greg. The referendum in 2018 was won by misinformation, untrue, misleading information that wasn't anyway true, but the government and NGOs were not honest to the people of Ireland. Many of you might engage with NGOs. I know throwing out sort of hate on NGOs is kind of a popular thing, but check what NGOs are too, to make sure that you know what you're talking about. Not you. I'm not speaking to an individual or scolding, but we have NGOs in this county we engage with all the time. Well done, Mary T. That other man hasn't a clue. What about all the people who had an abortion and never got over it and carry a life sentence of regret? What about those who were forced to carry a pregnancy that they didn't want? And that's where the debate starts, right? Cromwell and his henchmen would be rejoicing at Sinn Féin policy of aborting Irish babies, politics at its worst. Mary T. deflecting by trying to attack Sinn Féin instead of talking about the three-day wait, also blaming teenagers for multiple abortions, pure rage baiting. And Mary T., really, which I found quite remarkable because I talk to a lot of people, but Mary T. apparently has spoken to teenagers who've had multiple abortions. Or when I put that to her, she says, well, I've spoken to many teenagers. Where's the voice of the clergy on this issue? Once again, the church's silence is chillingly deafening. Yeah, it seems to have been. It is quiet, I'm not going to lie to you. Sinn Féin are finished. They're just another woke party that may as well join Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, says the listener. The country needs a radical new party similar to Reform in the UK. Can they not even leave the 3 days alone? Sinn Féin are an awful party. Is this the most important thing on Sinn Féin's agenda? And although the government speak about declining birth rates when they have murdered, listen, the people voted for this, but they describe it as murder, over 50,000 citizens with introduction of abortion, then flood the country with immigrants that have culturally nothing in common with this country. Martin and Harris have single-handedly ruined Ireland. The one thing I'll say there is there's a, arguably, if you wanted to drill into it, a little bit of a separation in that the lives that never happened are incredibly valued, and yet the immigrants are described almost as a subset of human beings. So in terms of a pro-life narrative, it's quite interesting because, you know, those that that this caller says were murdered are used as the emotive group, and yet immigrants who are also human beings are denigrated to almost a plague or a plight. That kind of seems counterintuitive to pro-life to me, but anyway. So yet more Mary Lou lunacy and the Sinn Féin bloodlust to scrap the three-day wait. What happened to the pre-referendum promise of abortion in Ireland being safe, legal and rare? Another good morning, Greg. Could you play a video of an abortion? Why would I do that? I was made sit through one of these through in secondary school. It did absolutely nothing. That's like saying make someone sit through a hip replacement and they won't get a hip replacement. I don't know. That shock and awe. If you can't articulate your argument and tap into people's moral judgment, maybe their religious guidance, well, then you don't have, you've lost the argument. If you want to shock people into stuff, you actually, all you do is desynthesize. Trust me, desynthesize, because we all came out of watching that in school. And after it was going on for 5, 10, 15 minutes, it was like, okay. It doesn't have the impact that you believe it might. How is there an appointment for women to have an abortion so readily available when the rest of the health system, you're waiting months or even years for potentially life-altering treatment? That is the main question. And that should be asked, not further around about this three-day thing. That's an interesting point. It's a very interesting point. And it's not even an abortion. Break it down just to health care. You know, if you want to describe or don't, if you just look at it, it is quite interesting, such fast access in one area of healthcare compared to others. Hi, Greg. The three-day reflection time is an important thing to keep. The GP, who will be given the medication to end the baby's life, can also give information to help them continue with the pregnancy safely. Lots of you texting in relation to that. We had David on the show yesterday. You remember the water burst in St. John's Park in Buncrana? Do you remember that? Hey, this is how we get results. It's still burst and it's still running. Sorry, normally we have success. Irish Water, Eisce Aran can be hard to influence. On the issue of Chrysler, fair play to them going to Dublin. However, it's been proven time and again the government doesn't care about the people of Ireland. There will be platitudes, promises and photo ops, but nothing will happen. But you can't give in. You have to keep fighting, don't you? Could you ask David Cullinan if Sinn Féin has any policies to promote population growth other than through migration, given the impending pension crisis? By 2050, it's projected that there'll be only two workers to every one pensioner. On the issue of the Givanistat drug, Greg, just to remind you that Charles Ward, sorry, I did omit Charles Ward and he got a specific mention. My apologies. Just to remind you that Charles Ward also supported the provision of the drug to the three Donegal families. He named on air four Donegal TDs. Well, I named three, actually, but omitted Deputy Ward from the group. You might correct this on air. I did. I'm sorry, Charlie. I'm sure it's not you that sexed in. I do remember in the days after we sort of said on this programme, look, you know, where are our public representatives on this? And the next day and the day after that is when it was mentioned in the Shannon and the Dáil. And I just in those couple of days, it must have left my mind that I didn't hear Charles Ward pursuing it then, but did subsequently. Right. I do have time for another one. Good morning, Greg. Is there any chance you could get one of the local councillors on the show to confirm exactly who's going to be housed in the new social housing units that are being built in Letterkenny Town? And a few are near completed. Also, the homeless housing on the Windy Hall Road. Is this for Irish homeless or just another I-Pass front? A lot of concerned people around that area especially needs to be let known to the public. Well, they're going to be serviced by the social housing waiting list. I don't know the nationality, the gender or the family makeup of those. But certainly it's not going to be used for I-Pass applicants. That's not the type of housing that's designed for them. They're in hotels and other accommodation. That's where we have to leave it on the show today. Just to remind you to listen at your leisure. I want you to enjoy John Breslin's show and the rest of our programming. Before you enjoy the podcast, of course, Gary Jennings. It's live on Highland Radio from 11, or search the Greg Hughes podcast wherever you listen to them. Have a fantastic day.